Tan Talk Radio Network.
Out to the ball game, take me out with the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks, I don't care if I never get back, let me root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame, for it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Oh yeah. Now, why would we be playing that this morning on our show? Well, I'll give you 3 guesses. The first one is the only one you're going to really be able to say. The Tampa Bay Rays are going to be playing their first game of the season. I guess it's tonight. We're going to talk later about that with Big Ed, our sports guru. But good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Yes, indeed. I am Paul Molloy, and along with Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us. It's Friday, July 24th. This is going to be the first time in memory, Ed, that the baseball season started at the end of July. What's going on here? I thought, I guess the baseball exhibition season was actually going on when the virus hit us, right?
No, actually, spring training had started.
That's what I meant. I shouldn't have said exhibition. Spring training. Yep. We had the players coming in and warming up and all of that. And then it shut down. I was watching last night, and I think ESPN. First game, which was a good one, by the way. The Washington Nationals, I think, were hosting the Yankees. And it poured.
And a monsoon.
A monsoon, absolutely. Do you know who won the game ultimately?
I don't.
I probably went into the wee hours by the time they were through. Anyway, we're going to talk later about that. In a few minutes, though, we'll be talking with Joel Zinberg of the Competitive Enterprise Institute about how not everybody dying with COVID-19 is dying because of COVID-19. You know what I mean? So we'll talk about all of that with him. And President Trump has canceled the Republican convention, which would have been held in Jacksonville, Florida, while begging schools to open up. We're going to talk about all of this and about how recent polling continues to favor Joe Biden with the proprietor of our barber poll, Andrew Ceresi. And by the way, forget about the rage on the left against Donald Trump for his demeanor, his personality, his way of doing things, his attitude, because they don't really care. That is not what bothers them about Trump. We're going to tell you in our 2-minute warning what really bothers them. So stay tuned for that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, speaking about schools, the top 10 world's greatest universities, the world's greatest universities. Please stay tuned for that as well. All right. Well, let's stay on schools. Donald Trump yesterday urged schools across the country to open up as long as they practice what he calls good hygiene, social distancing. He wants them open. And he's asking Congress to pledge $105 billion, $105 billion to the schools as part of the next package of handouts. I am not in favor of this. First of all, it's funny money. We don't have anything backing it up. And if $105 billion is going to the school, why do they need it extra from all they're getting now to open up? I don't understand that. I don't think it really goes to what it's intended to go to.
Let me ask you something.
Yes, sir, you may.
You ever heard of split sessions?
Yes.
Did you ever go through that in school?
I did.
I did, too.
I did go.
So if the problem is the 30 or 40 kids in the room and getting them to social distance, which you can't, why not go to split sessions for 6 months or whatever it takes?
Of course.
Why not?
Of course. There's a poll out that shows, and I think it's a legitimate poll. It's, I don't know if it's a Fox poll or a Columbia poll, whatever. It shows that most people, in some way, shape, or form, want the schools opened up again. About 60-plus percent. Now, a lot of them don't want it open completely. They want, like you just said, they want it with reservations, including, I'm sure, split sessions.
Yeah. One group goes from 7 to 12, the other one goes from 1 to 5.
I mean, to me, if you are wasting the most formative years of a child's life by not putting them in school, I think you're doing a great disservice to them in the long run. They always talk about how when kids are like 7, 8, and 9 and things that occur to them and how that always stays with them, et cetera. I think a good schooling is of utmost importance. And we can do it and not fall apart doing it. So I don't understand this big... Well, I do in a way. I do in a way because I think the unions are dead set against this kind of... situation politically, so it goes into that to some extent. But the president would like the schools open in one way or another, and he says we got to get our economy going. So, he was talking about a bunch of things yesterday. He talked a little bit about the virus. The Center for Disease Control Director, his name is Dr. Robert Redfield, has recently said that his agency's guidelines were only recommendations when he urged schools to find ways to open up their recommendations. And we all agree, I think, not all of us, but I would tell you that these are local issues, and so if a school feels that it can open safely, it should. If a school feels, or a district feels, let's put it that way, if a school district feels that it can teach the kids, I think it should have a bit of autonomy, because this is closer to the parents and to the kids, so those are where those decisions should be made. I do not think Donald Trump should make them, and I would argue that even governors to some extent should not make them. I think they should be even closer when it comes to these kinds of decisions, governmental decisions. The local governments and the district governments, I think, are the ones that we ought to allow for the decisions on this. And I think that, let's open up the auditoriums. If the days are good, maybe the kids could go out and sit outside and be schooled. But we got to teach them, and to tell us and say that, well, we'll do it over the internet, come on. Are you kidding? We're talking about kids, especially the grade school kids, and it just doesn't work. Common sense should tell you that. Now, Trump also said he's canceling the convention, the Republican convention. That was going to be held in Jacksonville. And the truth is, Florida's been hit hard, very hard, with the virus. And so next month, August, we know that the thing is still going to be going on. And I don't think they want to show all these people grouped together. Let's face it. It's not a good visual when you got a virus going on. So it's probably a good idea. We'll talk a little bit later about all of that with our buddy, the proprietor of Mainstream America's most important poll, the Barber Poll. In the meantime, let us take a break. When we come back, Joel Zinberg, he's a doctor. We're going to talk with him a little bit about how the virus and people that are dying with the virus may not necessarily be dying from the virus.
There's a reason for the sunshine sky, and there's a reason why I'm feeling so high. Must be the season when that little light shines all around us.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Back on a Friday morning, and thank you very much for being with us here on Freedom Works. Delighted to have Joel Zinberg join us. He is a doctor and a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're going to talk with Joel about a topic he's talked about, which is called which he calls death by policy, and it has to do with the COVID-19 virus and whether or not people that are dying with the virus are necessarily dying from the virus. Joel, welcome. And you know, you make an excellent point. I've been thinking about this ever since this thing began, about how people may be dying from other things and happen to have the virus. It may contribute to the cause, but maybe it's not really why they died.
That's correct. Good morning.
Good morning.
And the point of my piece was that not merely that people continue to die from other things that they normally die from, you know, your heart disease, your diabetes, your high blood pressure, those all continue even during a pandemic. But the major point of my piece was that the indirect effects of the pandemics, the deaths that are being caused by the social and economic responses to the pandemic, things like the lockdown, the shelter-in-place orders, those are contributing to deaths as well.
Indeed. Now, I'm looking here at the latest, I guess you can call it pandemic scoreboard, if you want. Here in the United States, 144,000 people now credited, or whatever the word would be, with dying from the virus. Worldwide, 634,000. And I wonder how many of those really did die from the virus and didn't die from maybe a stroke or a heart attack, or maybe they had cancer, or maybe it was another respiratory thing.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, the major problem in measuring this is that not everyone who test positive for the virus that causes COVID-19 died from that. In fact, most of the time the disease is mild or even asymptomatic. People don't even realize they have it. So that can lead to an overcounting if you count everyone who tests positive. On the other hand, not everyone dying, you know, who dies of something else, didn't have some contribution from COVID, because we do know that most of the people dying from COVID have other what are called comorbid conditions on board. So the COVID may have kind of tipped them over the edge. So that could lead to an undercounting if you think they died of a heart attack, but in fact it was a heart attack brought on by COVID. So it's a difficult problem trying to figure this out. And one way we do it is we look at what are called excess deaths. You look at the past few years, you determine how many deaths you expect during this time period, and then you compare how many deaths did actually occur during this time period, and you take the difference, and that's what's called excess deaths. So we know we have excess deaths this year, and the question is how many of them came from COVID. And the best estimate is that somewhere between two-thirds and three-quarters are from COVID, meaning that about a third to a quarter of the deaths were from something else. And that's what I refer to as that, you know, those indirect responses to the economic and social policy responses.
I'm going to mention a personal note. When my father was dying and when he passed away, they wrote down the wrong cause of death on the form, and I actually saw that and had them correct it. And I wonder how much, overall, how many times that really occurs. I mean, you want to think that everybody's got it exactly right, but by the time you get all of that stuff figured out, I wonder.
Yeah, well, most people don't realize when someone's filling out a death certificate, it's not with the benefit of an autopsy or either by the hospital pathologist or the medical examiner. It's a physician in the hospital, most often one of the more junior ones, a resident. So, for example, when I was a surgical resident many years ago, we were the ones who had to fill out the death certificates. And they're very complicated. They ask for, you know, the immediate cause of death, contributing factors to the immediate cause of death, underlying causes of the cause of death, and it's often very difficult to figure out what to put in what spot. So there are lots of errors done in that process.
Right, indeed. And another thing about this virus, I know we're trying to learn as much as we can. Hopefully, we are learning more about it. That's for sure. And one of the things apparently we have learned is that about, I don't know, what percent, maybe 85-80% of the people that have passed away that we think died from the virus are maybe like in their 80s or something like that? What do you have any figures on that?
Yeah, well, if you look both in Europe and in this country, it's about somewhere between 80-90% of the people dying are over 60.
Over 60, okay.
Right, so it's a particularly lethal disease for people who are even older, you know, over 70 and over 80.
And is it because of their immune systems being weaker, or you know what I mean? What is the major reason older people are dying from it and younger people are not? Is it just their systems, that they're stronger immune systems?
Well, it's age itself is probably a contributor to this, and that may be through the immune system. But it's also, as I mentioned before, almost everyone dying has underlying medical conditions. And, things like hypertension, heart disease, and obstructive pulmonary disease. And those are things that rise as age rises. So you have a lot of older people with a lot of concurrent, comorbid conditions.
Right, indeed. We're talking with Joel Zinberg. He is a doctor, as you can tell by listening to what he has to say, because he makes so much sense medically. And he is also a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And the CEI, Competitive Enterprise Institute, Joel, is known for being a pro-business organization, which I'm delighted to say that. So your thought as a doctor and also a member of CEI, about how businesses are opening up or not opening up, and maybe even the school situation. Are we on the right path? Should we pull in our horns? Should we be more aggressive? What do you think?
Well, I think, as all of these lockdown measures and various public health measures have these side effects, number one, the economic side effects. You've had millions of people losing their jobs. The economy is tanking. And then you have these health side effects, these things like increased deaths that we're not counting. So, for example, the VA health system, which is the largest health system in the country, reported that their admissions for six emergency conditions were down 42% during the pandemic. Now, those those emergency conditions didn't just go away. People continued to die of them, but they were dying at home where they couldn't be counted. And the reason they were dying at home is because they were told to shelter in place, or because they were too scared to come out and get medical care, or because there were limitations on the medical care available. Well, the hospitals and physicians were told, don't do any elective procedures. So people didn't think they could even get the care. So
right.
These folks who were getting the weren't getting treated for their emergency conditions, or folks who didn't come and go to the doctor to follow up and get care for their chronic conditions that deteriorated and led them to die. So these are all side effects of these things. So when you say, should we pull in our horns, I am very loath to go back to very stringent lockdown measures.
Right. Right. You know, it's another interesting thing that I thought about, and that is, and maybe you know, are there really more people overall in this period that have passed away, or less people in this period that have passed away with the virus in terms of if we had not had the virus? And the reason I say that is we locked down to some extent. That means we're not on the roads, which means we have fewer car accidents. You know, in other words, there's all kinds of things that occur because of the virus. It changes our behavior, and therefore it changes the number of people that will die. Maybe you won't be up, you know, walking across the street and getting hit by a bus or something. I mean, I don't know, but I just wonder if there are more or less people. And I know the answer is we don't know, but maybe we can take a poke at it. What do you think?
Well, that gets back to that concept I referred to before of excess deaths. When you compare what were the number of deaths in a given time period this year as opposed to the number of deaths you would have expected based on how many people died during that period, let's say in the last 5 years. So there have been a few studies of that, and one study estimated that between March 1st and May 30th of this year, there were about 122,000 excess deaths. But not all of those deaths were due directly from COVID.
Right. I'm just talking overall. I mean, if we have statistics.
No, overall, about 122,000.
Okay. A total number, no matter what.
Correct.
Even if they were hit by a car.
Well, in other words, they were just as likely to, or they, as you say, they may be less likely, but in other words, things like getting hit by a car you wouldn't normally expect to change, or things like
fewer people,
you know,
on the road,
any number of causes you wouldn't normally expect to change. We're trying to say,
right,
what would we have expected to be the number of deaths if we didn't have this pandemic?
Right.
And as you point out, there are some things that would maybe make you think there'd be fewer deaths. But on the other hand, I think the evidence is pretty clear. There are other things that lead to more deaths,
okay,
because of our response to the pandemic.
Yeah. No, I just think it's an interesting thought. My colleague, Ed Davis, has a question for you.
Dr. Zinberg, sure. I don't know if you heard about this story because of the amount of the deaths being recorded in Florida, that last week in Orlando, there was a tragic one motorcycle accident that was a fatality. And initially, the Department of Health had listed it as COVID death because when they brought the body in, whatever, I guess he had tested positive for COVID. And that went into the COVID death file as the cause of death. Now, Fox 35 in Orlando did a story and pulled it up, and the examiner actually tried to make a statement on air saying, well, maybe he had because he had the virus that it caused him to have an accident, whatever. 2 days later, he was put in the other file as taken off the COVID death. Now, I'm sure in their defense, out of the 10,000 recorded deaths that day, that TV news group just happened to pick out the one in 10,000 that was listed wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I'm not familiar with the story, but it's not surprising, and it's what I referred to before. It's a real problem of figuring out when someone has COVID and they die of something else, what caused the death. I mean, this particular story, it shouldn't have been a real head scratcher for them, but they obviously were predisposed to list it that way. But in other cases, it's not as clear.
Right. I guess we have accurate counts of number of people dying, even if it's, say, an associated cause. But where we start to lose maybe the count is the number of actual cases, and we've talked about this on the show before, where you will actually have somebody listed twice, you know, as being symptomatic, whereas he shouldn't be, you know. In other words, it makes it look like there are two people rather than one person twice, and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, but as I said, it's a real problem because you don't, you know, a lot of these folks have other diseases. You don't know what really caused the death. And, you know, in this environment, I think people are very quick to attribute it to COVID, but that is not necessarily always the case.
Yes. Well, Joel, it's been fascinating talking with you. Very, very interesting conversation. I certainly appreciate your time this morning with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Anytime.
All right, sir. Dr. Joel Zinberg from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're going to take our break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with the proprietor of the barber pole. He's over in Republican headquarters here in Palm Harbor, Florida. And we're going to talk with him about President Trump and all kinds of things. So stay tuned.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best hair cutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcast Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen, and I'm the host of Good Morning Clearwater. We are found right here on the Tantalk Network, 1340 AM and 106.1 FM, Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM. We will concentrate on Pinellas County and focus on Clearwater and Clearwater Beach. Weather, traffic, local and national current events, sports, trivia contests, and plenty of giveaways. We want to show the world why Clearwater Beach was voted number one beach in America. Listen up every Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM to Good Morning Clearwater.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back indeed on a Friday morning, and I'm looking here. More than 2,000 Portland demonstrators take to the street for the 57th night in a row, and you got all these pictures, Ed, of all this, I guess, the smoke from, I don't know if it's tear gas or what it is. And yet I've heard the, I think it's the mayor of Portland get out there. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, he tried to burn both ends of the candle there.
The mob almost took him away and were looking for a tree. I mean, it was...
And he got hit by tear gas with
Come on, mister. And he's trying to, I think he was trying to have it both ways, and he had it no ways. He's lucky he got out of there. Of course, he's flanked by about five or six people that are protecting him, right? I mean, that's the way it is.
Yep, his bodyguards.
Crazy. Well, we've got the proprietor of the only poll that really matters in mainstream America, the barber poll, Andrew Ceresi. And Andrew, are you back at the Palm Harbor Republican facility? Tell us all about that.
I'm at the Palm Harbor Republican facilities. You know, we're getting ready for all these candidates to get elected over here, get rid of these Democrats. We're all working hard and pushing hard to get this done because we know how important this election is. You know, it's either do or die for this country.
Indeed.
You know, you were talking about They were showing the live videos last night from Portland.
Yes.
That wasn't from there. That was actually when Bush did the shock and awe in Iraq, what you're seeing.
Oh, okay.
That's what you're seeing there, Paul.
It doesn't look any different. They could use that. Go ahead.
I can't believe the citizens in that state haven't stood up to this amount of people, to be honest with you.
You would think most of the people, the so-called silent majority, would have had enough of this and just, it's 57 nights in a row. What's going to be left?
I mean, say there's 5,000 of them there. You can't tell me there's only 5,000 people in all of Oregon, man.
I mean,
this is ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous. And we don't want Trump here to stop this. What are these people nuts? I bet you if you go ask the common person that lives there that isn't involved in this baloney, they're going to tell you, please, Trump, send the people in here to take care of this.
Yeah,
I'm tired of living with it, you know?
And the same thing in Chicago. We got that mayor over there. Some people say she has a Napoleonic complex. She's about 3 feet 4 inches tall, I guess, or something. But whatever she is, Lori Lightfoot, things are going to hell in a handbasket in my dear former hometown.
Paul, why don't the people need to go there and physically grab her out by the scruff of the neck to destroy in Chicago?
Come on.
I can't believe they're sitting there letting this happen. I can guarantee you if Al Capone was back in those days, that wouldn't be going
That's true. He's the kind of guy he would have sent out his own troops to quell the riots.
That's right. They would have taken care of it.
I'll tell you.
But you know, I'm gonna let you talk with Ron right now because he can let you know what's going on with this office here, man. We're getting wrapped up, and we're looking for more volunteers and getting things going. I'm gonna let him talk to you what's going on, and you can ask him some questions.
I'll be glad to. Thank you, Andrew.
All right, buddy.
Sure.
Hey, Paul, Ron Ogden.
Hi, Ron. How are you again, sir?
I'm doing real, real well, as a matter of fact. I'm just happy that we're getting so many volunteers to come into our Upper Pinellas Political Committee sponsored North Pinellas campaign office. It's here on U.S. 19, 29162 U.S. 19, about halfway between State Road 580 on the south and Curlew Road on the north. We've got two volunteers in here with us today, Sheila and Deb, and they're helping out, and we are working on our social media work and our sign placements, and I'll tell you what, it's going to be a big sweep for Donald Trump and all our good candidates, our Republican candidates here this fall.
You sound very positive, Ron. And by the way, we're going to do a program, with your blessing, we're going to do a program on primary day there.
Very good.
I hope that's not surprising you, but we're going to get over there. And,
on primary day? Wonderful.
Yeah, on
you
primary
will be very,
day.
Very, very welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to being there, actually.
I think, were you going to stop by for the sign waving we're going to do on August 11th?
Is that the primary day? It seems to me that's the day of the primary, but I may be wrong. What day is
it? The primary is August 18th.
18th. We'll be there for the 18th. I do a show, as you know, maybe on Tuesdays, so we'll see if we can get over there, but for sure.
We can get over here. We're having a big sign waving. We're going to get as many of our candidates here.
That's great.
To talk about the election this fall, and it'll be a big, big deal. So we hope you can make it here on the 11th, and if you can do it too on the 18th, that'd be great. You're welcome here whenever you want to stop up and do a broadcast.
Well, that's very kind of you. Ron, tell us about what you consider some of the more important races. Primaries, I mean, I know there's some excitement to them, but let's be honest, they're not like the actual election in November. So what are some of the more important races you think are going on in Upper Pinellas County, Florida?
Well, let's start off with a couple of the primary races first. We do have a race for the Pinellas County School Board. There are three candidates, and we favor a young lady whose name is Stephanie Meyer, and she is a wonderful young lady, conservative, a teacher, a mother, and she's been campaigning up and down Pinellas County for months now. And we just really feel very, very good about her, that she would bring a real breath of fresh air to the school board and some, you know, kind of modern insights. What America is like in 2020, what young parents need to have their schools do for them in this age of COVID, where frankly the schools aren't able, it seems, to figure things out.
That's
even
true.
Even when the schools are going to start.
Exactly.
So we think she'd bring a a good, sensible head to the school board, and we could help figure things out. And we also have a primary on August the 18th for the Pinellas County Tax Collector. And there's two candidates there, the incumbent, Charles W. Thomas, and the opponent's name is Joel Babala. And we think that this is going to be a very important race. Charles Thomas has been doing the job for the last 4 years, and we have a lot of confidence in him.
Mm-hmm.
But going on into the future, looking at our autumn elections in November, they're just so extraordinarily important. There's so many of them. It's, tell you the truth, it's kind of hard to take up your entire program listing them all.
No, I appreciate that. You are exactly right. And just on the school board thing alone, most people, let's be honest, most mm-hmm. people don't know the names of those people. But I'm thinking right now is more, maybe more important than ever. We got two big issues for schools, I think.
Yes.
One is obviously whether they should reopen or not. But secondly, I'm beginning to believe more and more and more that the curriculum that these kids are being taught needs to be examined, needs to be, the parents need to be aware. The politics that have become involved in teaching our children, you know, all of those things. So these,
Paul,
go ahead.
I think you're absolutely right. The social indoctrination that is going on in our public schools under the pressure of the teachers' union and the advocates for the current political and social culture that we see and the silliness that we see in our society, there's a lot of pressure to get these kids indoctrinated to that at a very early age so that they will not dare to question it in the years ahead. It's a shame. And I think that folks like Stephanie will be taking the lead in correcting that and bringing it back to what is essential for our children to learn how to read, to learn how to reason, to learn how to do their arithmetic and mathematical calculations, to learn civics and history, which has woefully been
Absolutely.
Abandoned
there you go.
In our educational system.
You're right on about that. You are right on about that. It is so important.
Thank you.
And we don't, I don't think most of us realize how you know, somebody like me that remembers getting, you know, civics and
mm-hmm.
And the importance of writing, of mm-hmm. cursive, of things.
Absolutely.
I don't know, there's all kinds of things. And I think we're the poorer for the lack of instruction in those areas. And the public school systems scare me.
They do.
I mean,
I've got a. Can I tell you a personal story?
Sure. Go ahead.
On the topic of all the old skills, this has happened a few months ago. I was visiting a friend of mine who owns a restaurant in the north part of Pinellas County, and he wasn't in the office. So I said to the young lady behind the counter, I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I'll leave him a note." So she gave me a piece of paper, and I took a pencil and I wrote out a note to him in cursive. And I gave it to her, and she looked at it, and she said, "Oh, my gosh, handwriting. What does this mean?"
Well, what was it? Shorthand. I thought maybe she would have said, "Oh, is this shorthand?" People don't, again, that's what's so scary. They can't take a pencil or a pen and write a declarative paragraph. Think about it. They don't even know what a declarative paragraph is.
And do you know why?
Or an imperative sentence. You remember that? Imperative?
I do.
Exclamatory?
And they've been taught not to do that because the educational system doesn't want them to have an intellectual formation that the discipline of writing a declarative sentence brings. If they're intellectually sheep, then the aristocrats and the elites of the Harvard class and the Washington, D.C. class, then they can better exercise control over the populace.
Ron Ogden, it's a pleasure talking with you.
You too, Paul. Thank you.
I thank you.
Let me give you back to the master barber.
Give back the master barber, because I got to say something to him real quickly. But thanks, Ron.
Paul, everything is going great over here. You know, one thing I got to say, did you hear Joe Biden the other day? He's giving one of his speeches. We're talking about education. People are afraid to sit there and send their kids to school with the COVID virus and this and that. However, Joe Biden the other day said he believes that he wants to have Muslim taught in the schools nowadays. First of all, this guy must not know the Constitution. You're not even supposed to talk about religion in public schools, right?
Well, I'm surprised that he made any sense at all. That's actually what I'm going to tell you these days.
Yeah.
If he starts talking for very long, do you notice that he doesn't? He starts to lose his... It starts to become a little bit nonsensical. You know what I mean?
I'm really
beginning to honestly think he does have an issue related to his age.
Paul, let me tell you something. He would score very, very highly on the dementia test. Okay?
Yeah.
No question. I feel bad for the poor guy.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the poor guy because they're exploiting a sick man.
That's why I think they're keeping him under wraps. He's not even taking questions.
No,
I mean,
nothing.
He should take some questions.
That's right.
First of all, it's usually a fawning press. They'll probably throw him some softballs to begin with. He may make the mistake of calling one of the Fox reporters or One American News or something once in a while, but I don't think he will.
He can't even throw him a softball. I think he's playing T-ball.
Can you imagine what happens when the debates come around?
They're not going to let it happen, Ed. They're not going to let it.
Really?
I'm beginning to worry about that. I'm beginning to worry they're not going to let him even get involved in the debates. Well, you know, I mean, if he can't speak in a declarative sentence when he's reading it off of a teleprompter, what's he going to do when he's asked a question?
When was the last time there was no presidential debate? And you can't play it on COVID.
What they'll do is they'll have the vice president candidate do the debating for him, because that's going to be their candidate anyway.
No, I think I'm afraid that they will have to have Biden stand up there. Maybe they can have a ventriloquist, some guy in the back behind the curtain.
They'll have it all recorded ahead of time.
Joe, just mouth what we're saying.
I thought that was already done now.
That might be.
It's unbelievable.
All right.
Unbelable.
Now,
we got to keep the faith.
Finally, I want to just plug how good a haircut you gave me. And I think Ed just was in the other day
yesterday
for another haircut.
Yep.
And, you know, we want to reemphasize how great a place and how good a job you guys do.
Well, we try our hardest. You know that. We've been around a long time, Paul. We try our hardest. And it's a regular barbershop. You can come in there and speak whatever your piece is, you know.
And you get to meet Donald Trump. He's standing right there. I always talk to him when I go in.
Yeah, you have to. I'm very proud to support our president, believe me.
Thank you, Andrew.
I thank you guys.
Our pleasure. And we'll be talking with you again next week, my friend.
You got it, buddy. Have a good weekend.
All right. May the Trump be with you. He always says that, may the Trump be with you, so I thought I would say that to him. All right, we're going to take our final break, and when we come back, forget about the rage about Donald Trump's attitude and demeanor. That's not what bothers the left. I'm going to tell you what really bothers the left in our two-minute warning.
It won't take long. We're going to do the twist, and it goes like this. Come on, let's twist again.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barbershop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio, heard every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all
Hey, everybody. This is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back, and I am trying to bring up on Google Dr. Fauci's first pitch. He was in, I guess it was in Washington, D.C., Ed, and I see that he went out there. He got a baseball cap on. And all these stupid ads come up as soon as I try to click on this thing. It drives me
crazy.
Depends
on which site you're on.
I was on Google, but that's all right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I did see him go out there all dressed to kill. I didn't see the pitch. I don't know why I didn't see the pitch. So you tell me about Dr. Fauci. Did he throw that?
Well,
did he do it like, remember when President Bush threw one, a really pitch?
No. Let me put it this way. The catcher stood up with body language like, did he not see me squatting here? Not only was it short, but Paul, if you were sitting there, I would throw the ball into Lola's office. It had to be at least 20 feet to his left. And he wasn't even close.
Well,
and then he threw his arms up like, oh, well, you know, it just kind of reminded me. I thought you said we didn't need masks. Oh, well.
Well, you don't understand
me
that.
Lucky charms.
Ed, you don't understand. Fauci was throwing a slider. That's all.
It has to go down as the, and that's got to beat every woman or child that's ever tried this. But that throw has got to beat every one of them. He looked like a left-handed girl out there throwing it.
Oh,
that's
boy.
Right-handed.
Okay. Well, maybe it's good that he became a doctor and not an athlete.
Hopefully, he's not doing surgery.
Well, that's true. And now you're scaring me a little bit. I want to do a two-minute warning with everybody, and I want to talk a little bit about this I would call folks or fake outrage with the demeanor of Donald Trump. The one thing I most worry about in our political environment these days is the socialist takeover of our constitutional system of government. And I think we're closer to that takeover than ever before. Forget about the raging of the left against Donald Trump for the way he does things. They don't really care about that. They don't care about his demeanor. They don't care about his wealth. Really, they don't. They don't care even about his personality. Because if he was a socialist with all of this, with all these character traits, they would deify him. They'd put him up for sainthood. But he's not. He's not a socialist. He's a capitalist. He's a free marketeer. When Hillary Clinton was running for president, it made no difference to the left wing of the Democratic Party that she cheated people when she was an attorney in Arkansas, when her husband was governor and lieutenant governor. It didn't make any difference. Or that Bill Clinton was accused of rape and sexual harassment throughout his political career. All that's forgiven when Hillary was running for president, because she was an advocate for socialist causes, for the causes of the left. Whoever espouses a socialist philosophy and a game plan to control the flow of capital through the federal government, rather than having it kept in the hands of the people who earn it, are going to be the darling of the left wing. For instance, C-SPAN. I watch that on a regular basis when I get up. They started out their Washington Journal show today with the topic of a slur by a Republican congressman against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Why is that the main topic while cities like Chicago and Portland are burning and all these lives being lost in the inner cities? Well, it has nothing to do with concern about a female put down by a Republican. Because the left really doesn't care about that. They don't care. It has everything to do with the socialist efforts of AOC, Ocasio-Cortez, and her hate of capitalism. And I worry that more and more people are allowing this virus of socialism to seep more and more into our country. Okay, it is time. Oh, I got to talk with you, Ed, real quickly.
Can you see that on your screen right now?
Yeah, I can.
Hang on.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. That was horrible. That was horrible. My niece, my seven-year-old niece could throw it better.
A left-handed girl is right-handed could have thrown that better.
Real quickly, Tampa Bay Rays open up. Tell us tonight.
They opened tonight at home. Nobody will be there.
Hey, what difference will it be from last year?
The Rays are going to have an advantage there.
They'll have an advantage. We're making jokes because they have such a low attendance.
Yeah.
So, who are they playing?
They're playing the Blue Jays tonight.
Okay.
Who don't have a home.
And we think that the Rays have a good team. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think they definitely make the playoffs.
They look tough.
35 to 39 wins will get you in, so I think they're clearly going to be in that situation.
Excellent. Okay, it is time for our top 10. We're going to do it real quick because we went over a little bit. This is from Forbes, Ed. Top 10 world's best universities. Here we go, number 10.
Oh, hang on.
You've got to get Ed over to the drums.
You got me too quick. There, here we go.
I'm sorry. The University of Chicago, created in 1890, a lot of famous people have come out of there, known and famous for their part in the Manhattan Project, which developed the atom bomb. Number 9, the Imperial College of London, one of the highlights of their place, Global Experience Week. Their classes travel to other countries for intensive trip exploring. Number 8. Yale University, New Haven, Connecticut, fourth oldest institution of higher education in the U.S. Number 7, another Ivy Leaguer, Princeton, founded in 1746 as the College of New Jersey. Number 6, Harvard. They were founded in 1636. That's over 100 years before our revolution. Number 5, California Institute of Technology. That's in Pasadena, California. Strong emphasis on engineering, science, and math. Number 4, MIT. Stands for Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Brainy people. Founded in 1861. Number 3, Stanford. Palo Alto, California. Founded in 1891. Terrific school. Number 2, Cambridge University, that's in England, dates back to the 13th century. Wow. And finally, Ed, I know, well, let me give you a hint, because I'm going to ask you if you have any idea. It's not far from Cambridge.
Oh, I don't know.
You probably don't.
We did Yale, right?
Well, Yale's not that close. Cambridge is in England.
Yeah, I know.
That's all right.
I don't know.
Okay, my friend. That's okay. It's Oxford.
Oxford.
You've heard of Oxford,
they
right?
They make pants, too, don't they?
They do. They do. They're known for their pants and for their... It's the oldest university in the English-speaking world. It's the world's second oldest university in continuing operation. All kinds of good things about Oxford University. All right, that's it. We thank you very much for having been with us. Have a safe weekend. We'll be back on Monday. And remember that freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZH